Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I'm your host for this weekend's edition. Also your host throughout the week on our website and podcast, kereport.com and Corlin Economics Report. We had another busy week full of company interviews and analyst interviews, a lot focused on resources, but also some broad market comments. I am kicking off the show with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. Now, to bring everybody up to speed with Matt, MJG Capital is a fund focused on investing in resource stocks and even down to some of the smaller resource stocks. Now, Matt, last time you and I chatted was back in the middle of January in, I guess we can call it more the middle of that correction in precious metals, but that was also at the time that base metals were running higher. There's been a lot of activity in the junior space, a lot of money raised, and a lot of news that's come out just in the last couple of weeks. I want to start off with a focus on your fund. How active has MJG Capital been during these last, let's say, 5 months?
Firstly, Corey, it's great to be back on the program here. It has been a few months since we've caught up. I think this should be a pretty timely update. And I hope to find you well, despite the slow vaccine rollout in Canada. I feel fortunate enough to have gotten my second jab a couple Fridays to go, and it's nice to be able to venture out into the world here. In terms of MJG, since we spoke in January, we've been very quiet, at least in terms of initiating new positions. So far this year, we've only initiated two new positions in the fund, both via private placement, one in Q1, and then one more recently in April here. I've really been sticking with the mantra of, be right, sit tight. And it's been working out well for us. And we already have a full portfolio that's most entirely deployed. And so not desperately looking for new names to add to the portfolio by any stretch. So really, really picking our opportunities. And I think that's the right mentality in this market environment, 1 year already well positioned. In terms though of buying, we have been solidifying some of our existing holdings that have maybe underperformed or not caught the buzz that we've seen with plenty of juniors across the space here. And I often feel that sometimes the best place to look for new purchases is within your existing portfolio, and you got to look at it through clear eyes. You don't want to be deluding yourself. But assuming that the thesis is still intact and the company hasn't moved, where better to look than the opportunities you already know best? So some examples of names that we've been buying in recent months, and this is all through placing limit orders and being patient. A few of the names would be Alta Strategies, Africa-focused royalty generator, Golden Valley Mines, which is a name I've written about probably for a good two and a half years here in the MJG investor letter that goes out every 6 months. Sama Resources, that's another name I've covered in the investor letter. Lara Exploration. So these are names that I'm picking away at, have a high degree of confidence in the people involved. The theses at each of the stories still remain intact. And, I think they're likely to get some love as this market progresses here.
Hey, so Matt, the stocks that you brought up there, they're, in all fairness, very diversified. You have an African-focused royalty play. We have a nickel exploration company. I want to ask you then, what right now is the balance in terms of the positions and resources that the MJG Capital portfolio is focused on? Can you break that down for us, please?
Sure. It's a good question. And I'll just say simply, we have a broad natural resource mandate. So at the moment, we're entirely focused on mining equities, and this goes as early stage as prospect generation and as, you know, late stage as either producing miners or more frequently in our portfolio, the royalty players. You know, technically within our mandate, we also have agriculture, you know, water, forestry, proteins. But at the moment, we're very, very much honed in on metals and mining. Funny enough, and we were chatting about this a little bit before the interview, you know, you'll come to these points in the market, and it's happened twice in the past 12 months. First was summer of last year, especially as we headed into July, August timeframe, where precious metals were absolutely ripping. Juniors were doubling and tripling in price. We have the gold price, you know, trading up to all-time highs near 2,100 an ounce. And I had multiple folks, both investors in the partnership and those otherwise saying, hey, why don't you focus, you know, entirely on precious metals? This is clearly the place to be. I feel like you're missing out. Well, sure enough, you know, August comes to pass. We go into early September. And as plenty of your witnesses, listeners, I'm sure, have witnessed, we've now corrected here for a good 7 or 8 months in precious metals. It looks like we've turned the corner over the past 4 to 8 weeks. So that's encouraging. But of course, right when folks are saying you should be going all in on PMs, that's the moment where you should be looking elsewhere. And just in February of this year, when the battery metal, the energy metal, equities were rocking, those narratives were really gaining traction. I heard the same thing. You should be all in on EV metals. You should be all in on these metals that help power our 21st century lifestyle. And my response is, well, we're well positioned, but no, we already have a pretty narrow mandate. I think chasing the flavor of the month, if anything, is counterproductive. And you're also, you know, unnecessarily limiting the opportunities that you have to invest. So long story short, we're pretty well diversified, I'd say, at least within the metals and mining space. At the moment, we sit, you know, we're roughly 45% weighted towards the energy metals, as I call them. That would include copper. That would include uranium. That would include nickel, vanadium, rare earths. You know, roughly 40% weighted to precious metals at the moment. That's entirely through gold and silver. We don't have any substantial PGM exposure at the moment, but that could change. There's not a specific reason for that. And then more recently, in the past few months here, we're now up to 15% exposure to the ag minerals. And that's partially due to a position we initiated in Q1 of this year that has nearly tripled in price. And so that's lifted up our weighting there to both phosphate and potash, which I think are going to be great places to be over the coming few years. And those stories are just getting going here.
Matt, I want to ask you about how you manage some of your positions when you do see pops like that. You've already mentioned an ag mineral stock that went up 3 times just this year. We can also tie that into some of the early stage exploration plays, or even slightly more advanced exploration plays that run up before drill results are announced. And with all the drill programs just beginning, we have already started to see this action again. Are you actively trading some of these positions if you do see them rise ahead of any significant news?
Yeah, I think that's prudent, in all honesty. I mean, we have internal portfolio kind of controls or rules of thumb, at the very least, that they stick by in terms of position sizing. So the absolute most that I would commit to a single position is 10% of the fund, which is actually a very, very high number. But it's 10% at cost. And then assuming we make an investment and it does very well, the maximum position I'd be comfortable with is 20% at market. So 10% at cost, 20% at market. And so that could be one reason to sell right there. If we go above that 20% threshold, that's already a very healthy weighting. And so that right there would be a reason to take profits. But as you mentioned, oftentimes in this space, at least in bull markets, like we've seen in recent months, you'll see the share price rally in anticipation of news or based purely on changes in sentiment. So I think if a share price moves, you want to distinguish whether it's due to changes in sentiment or anticipation from the market, or whether it's due to a fundamental development on the company level that actually justifies the share price move. And if you have an opportunity, you get involved in a position and it goes up 2x or 3x purely because people are excited about an upcoming drill program or they're anticipating a potential takeout, or they're getting excited about the metal of focus or the commodity of focus, like ag minerals, for instance, like we discussed. I do think it's a good opportunity to take your cost basis off the table, and then at that point, you can still have a healthy weighting, but you're playing with the house's money. And once you're in that position, you can make more informed decisions going forward. So, really, you want to look at it, on a case by case basis. But that's generally how I'll decide. You know, firstly, is the move justified by a fundamental company specific development? If yes, then maybe we'll hold the entire position. Is it based off of hype or speculation? If that's the case, then I'd be more willing to take some or all of our initial capital off the table.
Okay, thanks for that update. Now, one other thing that you mentioned at the very start here is that the two new positions that you have entered were through private placements, especially for the precious metals sector. Even while it was going through that 8-month correction, there was still a lot of money being raised. There still is a lot of money being raised. This has been a large financing window for the sector. And some of the analysis that I get on the back of these financings, I think, is fairly flawed. A lot of people really rip into companies for when they're issuing these half warrants. Sometimes, if the terms are right, I don't have a problem with that. How do you go about analyzing these individual news events when a company is raising money to, I guess, give you the confidence that the story's still moving forward, this is a good financing, or on the flip side, this was a bad financing and it decreases your interest in the company?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. And you're absolutely right. Money has been flowing across the junior space, whether you're talking about the precious metal names or the energy metal names. Just recently, we've seen close to a dozen silver companies come to market right here. And I'm actually supportive of that from the issuer's perspective, at least. I think in this type of market environment, the money's on the table. It's worth taking it. We're definitely in a euphoric market environment currently. And I think it's quite possible that the general market or the broader market rolls over here in the coming months. And the junior space can get, smacked right on the lip for no fault of its own. So I think it makes sense not to get too greedy and cash up if the appetite is there. As I continue to invest and accumulate experience in this space, I am becoming a little bit less attached, one could say, to full warrant financing, at least in this current market environment. So generally, if I'm looking at a company's financing and trying to evaluate whether it's an opportunity or not, I actually try to put the financing to the side for a moment, ignore the terms, ignore whether there's a half warrant, full warrant, or no warrant attached, and just look at the company itself. Starting with the people involved, are they folks that I trust? Are they folks that have made money for me in the past, or friends of mine money in the past? Are they well incentivized? Are they well suited for the task at hand? Then look at the asset. Then look at the upcoming catalyst, the company structure, the valuation at this level. All that good stuff. So really try to look at it from a bottom-up perspective, not get too enticed by the deal terms one way or another. Then you evaluate whether the company fits within your current portfolio. Maybe it's an interesting opportunity, but you already have too much exposure or enough exposure to a certain jurisdiction or a certain metal. That could be a reason to say no. And then in terms of evaluating the specific financing, I think you'd want to look towards the company's previous financings and see whether this is a step in the right direction. Are they raising at a higher share price? If they're including a half warrant, maybe they included a full warrant in their previous two deals. So that's a step in the right direction. Conversely, you can have companies that raise money with ease in previous financings, maybe without including a warrant at all. And if you see a full warrant attached, that's a potential opportunity and it's something worth digging into, but it could also be a sign that something's badly awry. So I think you want to look at the terms and the structure of the deal relative to previous financings, and that can give you a decent sense of whether the company's on the right trajectory. But one way or another, you don't want to get too tied up in the actual terms of the deal as far as I'm concerned. Focus on whether this is a story that you'd like to invest in. If working capital was not an issue.
Absolutely. Make sure they are doing, the company is doing the work that you think can provide those catalysts, because there's a lot of companies out there right now doing work, but not all projects are the same and not all work programs are the same either. Let's talk about one specific deal that caught a lot of attention back in the middle of May. That's Filo Mining, traded FIL on the Venture Exchange. The company came out with a huge drill hole. It got a lot of attention. It caused the stock to more than double in a very short period of time. The drill result was 858 meters of 1.8% copper equivalent. What's your takeaway from this hole? Filo Mining, it already was, I think, a pretty solid company, but how important was this drill result to the continued story here?
It's exciting. It's exciting for the junior space as well. This really gets folks' speculative juices flowing when you have a bona fide discovery. And this is no doubt a tier one team backed by tier one people. And it's genuinely shaping up to be a tier one deposit here. I certainly don't fault anyone for owning Filo at the current levels, even if they're initiating the position from scratch. And I do know quite a few folks that were positioned in the story before the discovery. So major kudos to them. They're friends of mine who are participating in the $1.85 placement back in mid last year. So they're sitting quite pretty here. We don't own Filo ourselves in the MJG fund. We're already very well weighted towards copper at about 25 to 30% of the overall portfolio. And also we have 7 copper focused names, which is a lot for a portfolio with 20 to 25, core positions at any given time. And one of those larger holdings is a company called Nova Royalty, which already has significant exposure to to Argentina, given that their flagship asset is the NSR over First Quantum's Taca Taca project. So we've steered clear, but I don't fault anybody for owning at current levels. I will say there were folks out there on social media, banding this about as the best drill hole of the past decade. I think that's demonstrably not true. It was an absolute screamer of a hole, potentially the best hole of this year. I guess for some context, I went back and looked at the true discovery hole at the Timok project in Serbia. And this is going back nearly a decade, 9 years ago into 2012. And, the Filo hole you mentioned, 858 meters at 1.8% copper, incredible intercept. It included a high-grade portion, sub-interval of 163 meters at 5.4% copper equivalent from 780 meters. So, again, excellent hit. But for some context, if you look back and look at the true discovery hole at Timok, management actually was declaring hole 1210, the discovery hole, but I think 1213 is what really tagged into the high grade upper zone there. We saw 160 meters at 10% copper equivalent from 460 meters. So we're looking at nearly double the grade over the same width. At close to half of the depth, 460 meters compared to 780. So I think that puts it in, I just want to put it in perspective for listeners not to get too carried away. I guess a couple other points of note observations here. The first is, I would say pretty definitively, the Lundin family is not going to let this company go. As far as I'm concerned, they're going to take this into production however long it takes. And this district, which includes the discovery, but also the nearby Jose Maria project, which is held by Lundin as well in a separate vehicle. I think those ultimately go together. That could happen, in the near term or matter of a few years here. And I think later this decade, we could even see the asset absorbed into Lundin Mining itself. So I get the sense that the Lundin family is not looking to cash in on this project anytime soon. And their hope is that it's going to be in the family producing for decades to come. Look, there's a lot of difficulties with this project. There are a lot of hurdles to overcome, even with the excitement around the discovery. The project is straddling a border between two antagonistic countries, Argentina and Chile. And it's going to have to advance through the permitting tracks in both of those countries, realistically. So it's going to take quite some time. Eventually, due to the altitude of the project, it's way up there in the Andes. The project is at risk if we do truly see a glacier law push through in either of these countries. And I don't ultimately think that will come to pass, but it's a possibility if a leftist government comes in any other country. So the project could be in the crosshairs there. Then there's the high cost of exploration at these altitudes and in these remote regions. The company would be lucky if they're able to drill for $1,000 a meter. I think their shorter programs were closer to $1,500 a meter. They're drilling year round. They can likely get down to $1,000. That's extremely expensive. I mean, that's an order of magnitude more expensive than what you'd be seeing if you're drilling closer to home in places like Nevada or in Quebec. The final point here would be, water accessibility is a potential concern. I know management says full-throatedly that they're not concerned. There's plenty of water available in Argentina. There are quite a few hurdles and boxes that need to be checked. I do, however, think it's the right team to do it. It's just going to take some time, and it's going to take some patience. So I think investors that are invested currently, there's a couple ways to do it. You can play drill hole to drill hole and hope that we see better results in this coming batch of assays than we saw in hole 41. Or you could take the longer-term approach and say, I trust the Lundins. This is a monster of a project. I'm going to buy these shares, put it in a dresser drawer for a few years and not worry about it and let them build value and check through these lists of things that need to be done before the project can actually be developed. So we're steering clear, but it's an incredible discovery and one that should be on everybody's radar, even if just out of academic interest.
So on the back of that Filo hole, look, it's just another sign of the market that if you drill some good holes, the market is taking notice. Wrap us up then, Matt, with any other companies, any other drill results that have caught your eye over these last number of months, please.
Sure. I mean, one that has caught my eyes, caught the attention of the market has been Zach Flood and Francis McDonald's Canorlin Minerals and their continued success at the Renault project in Quebec. For those not following, Kenneland is a prospect generator driven by two very intelligent but young and ambitious geologists. And they have projects primarily in Quebec and then in Alaska. Those are kind of their two areas of focus at the moment. And to these guys' credit, they started the company in pretty ugly markets, so they're able to stake large land packages. And they're aggressive. They're swinging for the fences, for better or for worse. They're not looking for small deposits here in either of those jurisdictions. So Renault is their most advanced asset. Sumitomo is their joint venture partner there and just earned an 80% stake. So Canorlin has, some exposure to continued success there. And, to my understanding, they've just come out with the first batch of assays from the winter program. We have another 15 holes or so to go. They've reported roughly half of the results. And then such as Sumitomo's excitement about what's going on at Renault, we have a 20,000-meter program that's being prepared as we speak. So it's full speed ahead there. Very exciting for shareholders. We've been involved with Zach's group since early 2020. They that's treated us very well. I think on a split adjusted basis, our first investment in the company was at 25 cents, but we since doubled down on their most recent financing at a dollar because I like how they're going about their business and the opportunity there. So Canorlin's one that's been exciting. It's not a holding of ours, but I'm following Jean-Marc Lulan's Azimut discovery at Elmer. I think that's bringing some excitement to the James Bay region. He goes about business the right way. Incredibly smart individual, not promotional. So he stands out from a lot of the leaders of these juniors that we follow. And I'm hoping for the best there. We own a company called Harfang Exploration, led by Francois Goulet, who's exploring just to the southeast. of the discovery at Elmer there. And you're, I mean, you're right. Just in a general sense, this is a discovery market, and expect it to continue and maybe even gain traction here. You know, folks like Rick Rule out there saying that 2022 is set to be the year of the explorer. I'm sure there's some, you know, book talking there to some degree, but I would generally echo those sentiments, especially as these higher quality development projects continue to be taken out one by one. The cupboard is increasingly bare, and for the first time in decades, we're gonna see the major miners going much farther down the food chain than they have, and start to explore, whether it's brownfields, greenfields, all of the above. I think the well-managed prospect generators and explorers with respected teams and, you know, the ability to bring in partners are going to be in great shape here. So in the MJG fund, we're pretty far up the food chain here. I think our median market cap is around 60 million. So hopefully the market trends in this direction, and we have a bit of a golden era here for explorers and the like.
All right, Matt. Hey, it's great having you on the show. Thanks for taking time on these two extended segments. We covered a lot, but you know what? There is a lot to talk about. It's an exciting time for the resource sector and the whole way down to the juniors, because a lot of them do have money and there's a lot of work going on. So it's just a different world than 5-6 years ago, that's for sure. Matt, thank you as always for your time. Again, Matt is managing partner at MJG Capital. Pleasure having you on the show, Matt. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, Corey. We'll do this again soon.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.